What do you guys think about going through the book with me by Craig Keener, Miracles? It's a 2-volume set, and I'm just putting this out here. I'm not saying I'm going to do it, but a 2-volume set of Craig Keener about the credibility of the New Testament accounts, but it's really about the credibility of miracles. And it is his call for people to get involved into a deeper study, which in this video I call Miracleology. And I think we need to have a place for that within our church and a methodology. But I'm going to be going through this, and I was seeing if you guys want to go through it with me, because why not? Why not let my patrons go through it with me? So let me know if you do. I'm going to go ahead and get started here and just start reading through some of this work. I'll probably develop a better methodology as I go through this, but at the same time, I think the methodology is kind of just working through it together. And if I think you are watching, then I will read something differently and ask the questions better if I say, hey, this is going out there. There's an audience watching this, whether it's one or whether it's 10. So let's try this out.
Theology. Unplugged.
Right before he starts telling the stories of his miracles, just to kind of tell you how he's going to do it. In the postmodern West, as in much of the world, we often reason by telling stories. And in this case, there's no shortage of stories through some of, though some of them are more sincere and compelling than others. I noted the last chapter that hundreds of millions of people claim to have witnessed miraculous healings. I'm going to go back there and get you the number exactly. I mean, whenever you poll the world and ask how many people have seen or experienced a miracle, I think it's well above 60%, maybe around 80 or 90%. Now, it doesn't make them all true. I'm just saying that that many people throughout the world believe in miracles. There is a common human sense to some elements. I'm not saying this is one of those, but I believe it is, but you have to be convinced of it through other means. What I offer in these two chapters is now is merely an embarrassing small sample of what is available regarding these claims. Scholars beginning their careers in relevant disciplines could easily spend the rest of their lives collecting healing claims. And what a great thing that would be. I mean, to have a channel on YouTube where every day you put together a new healing claim, maybe either read it or have somebody on that did get healed. And let people decide. I think the best thing is whenever you're able to have people on telling their own story. I think there is a sixth sense within humans, most of us, or most of you, maybe not me, but to be able to sense whenever somebody's telling the truth and whenever they're not. I know there's really good liars out there, but I think if you saw this, you would probably say, is there that many really good liars? Because all these people seem to be following all the patterns that we are going to be laying out in this book that we look for whenever we are trying to evaluate miraculous claims, which is one of our primary goals here, is to try to figure out how do we think through these things in an honest way that honors God and in the end comes to the best conclusion that we can as responsible human beings created in the image of God. Okay, where was I? Scholars can make their career. One could undoubtedly document even larger numbers of peoples who are not healed, but since that observation is merely is not a matter of controversy, at least not among the vast majority of the book's audience, it does not require much special documentation. In other words, you don't have to prove that people sometimes don't get healed. You don't have to prove that sometimes life moves on and it stays the way that it is without any change. It will continue to stay the way that it is without any effort. Although not by any means the causes of all church growth, is widely documented that reported miraculous healings have abetted church growth in much of Asia. My reasonings for mentioning church growth or conversions with respect to healings here and elsewhere in this book is to point out that those witnesses or are those who are witnesses or as close to those who are witnesses such reports take them quite seriously. Often these are people reared in entirely different religious traditions for whom changing their faith tradition is socially costly, sometimes even leading to ostracism or persecution. Nevertheless, they act as if they fully regard the cures as qualitatively or quantitatively strongly different from the sorts of recoveries to which they are accustomed. In other words, there are miracles that have always been claimed, but these type of miracles are different. These aren't the ones that they can deny. And seeing as how these people get kicked out of their social structures, their communities, because they become Christians, it adds credibility to at least their own belief that these really happen. And we have this all the time. You remember, it doesn't necessarily mean something's true just because a miracle is tied to it. It means you should listen to it because a miracle is tied to it. It means there is access to the transcendent or to a dimension that we do not have access to. And once you have that access, then you can begin to ask questions. That's why God put a twofold test for questioning whether or not a prophet is true. Number one, does a prophet claim does he have any miracles? Does he have anything extraordinary that he's done? Does he predict the future and it come true? And if he does have something extraordinary that makes you look at him and say he has access to a different power base than we do, therefore it is transcendent to ours, therefore it is supernatural. Now the question is, does he have access to the good one or to the bad one? That's what God is doing with the second question in Deuteronomy chapter 13. If he then says, hey, Jesus is not God, hey, let's go follow after other gods, hey, let's do something evil that has previously been restricted by revealed truth that has been verified, then don't follow him, because it will never contradict that which came before it. It will always be in accord with previous revelation. So whatever, anytime somebody gives you a miracle or a prophecy and they say something that is not in accordance with that which has gone before it, you reject them. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who they claim to be. It doesn't matter their power structure. Doesn't matter the church that they belong in. They just can't make stuff up. Otherwise, anybody can just come to you and make something up. But anyway, in Deuteronomy chapter 13, it says, the Lord your God will test you sometimes to see if you really love the Lord your God by sending a false prophet and having him say, let's go chase after other gods, or let's contradict that which has come before in Revelation. Then you know it's from a bad power source, Satan, evil. Okay. Although not by any means the cause of church growth is widely documented. Okay, we already did that. These cures are reported also in regions not covered in my examples below. For example, many healings in the nation of Mongolia have reportedly contributed to church growth there. My focus, however, will be on areas where I have greater documentation. In other words, we're going to be in these other countries, and we believe that miracles happen there. They may happen more frequently because of their worldview. I don't know, you know, why God would cause one place to have more miracles unless he is kind of breaking into this area, breaking down the structures, intervening in a long-standing understanding that is false, and he's going to come break through and feed all the other gods, cause lightning to come down from heaven and light the sacrifice while the others are beating and cutting their chest, trying to get their God to do it, and it can't. Okay, so we're going to go to Indonesia, South Korea, the Pacific, and at length, China. Afterwards, he will return to well-known examples from early 20th century China. And indigenous Chinese church leaders, often respected today by both the three self and house churches. I don't know what the three self is. You might. Okay, before proceeding, I must note some limitations in my treatment. Although I have tried to offer geographic diversity in this chapter and in the next chapter, I explore four countries at greater length and with more direct interviews than most others. Two in Asia, and one currently the world's most populous country. The third in a very small, a very small country in Africa, and the fourth, a very fairly small country in Latin America. For example, Chinese Christianity presents itself forcibly because of the size of the nation and that and the many published reports about perspectives of Chinese Christians regarding healing. My explanations in this and immediately following chapters are merely examples given the limited range of data I have immediately available. I am not medically qualified to evaluate the claims that I have found, though in some cases medical evaluations accompanied the claims. Doctors have offered feedback on the reports available to me, nor have I followed up on all available written reports with personal interviews, though I did conduct perhaps 100 interviews and have personal correspondence from well over 100 other persons. Nor, for that matter, have I surveyed or even a notable fraction of the massive number of claims being made, including those potentially available to me. I offer these explorations with the expectation that other scholars with fuller resources, expertise, and interest in the relevant specialized research will develop them more fully. That is, I offer concrete examples for my claim that many eyewitnesses affirm that they have seen miracles. Only later in the book will I seek to cull some of those that I believe provide the stronger evidential value for the supernatural causation. We'll go through some of those and talk about those that he has culled. Let's see here. Let's go to the Philippines. Talk about some of those for a while. The Philippines offers abundant miraculous claims, of which I narrate a sample here. One Western researcher in the Philippines interviewed people who were prayed for to see if any of them felt better, and was astonished to learn that 83% of them actually reported that they had experienced some dramatic healing from God in their bodies. 83% say they have had some miraculous healing. Okay, I've got to mention this because a lot of you guys will be thinking about this, and I think it's relevant, and we'll probably talk about it more if we go on with this. But in 2006, there was a STEP study, STEP study published on the subject of intercessory prayer, where strangers prayed, a group of strangers, it was a good base, strangers prayed for patients to recover from surgery. I think it was just surgery. And the controversy claimed because the results showed little to no difference in those prayed for and those not prayed for. And that can be discouraging if you think about it, because if you think prayer works, and then you got this big study where you've got all these people being prayed for and it not helping. As a matter of fact, the study a little bit showed, if it showed anything, that those who were prayed for and knew they were being prayed for, not just the ones that were being prayed for, because there was a blind study test, but the ones who were prayed for and knew they were being prayed for did worse. And so that was interesting as well. So I don't know how well you take that study. I mean, for me, it's kind of like, I don't know that prayer is that impersonal. And I don't know that the power in prayer can be expected outside of that being impersonal. What I mean by that is not that you have to know the person, but that you actually really have to care. And not about proving something, not about putting together some data. So I think prayer is a lot more spiritual than just doing a study like this. I think it's probably more in line with something like this, although it's very hard to tell on this stuff. I bring that up because it's very important for you to understand that we've got to be critical on both sides, and that 2006 STEP study will get brought up all the time whenever you're talking about miracles and the power of prayer. Okay, Dr. Julie Ma, a Korean missiologist, meaning somebody who studies or teaches on the subject of missions, missions to other countries, a missiologist at the Oxford Center of Mission Studies, notes that Pentecostal Christians in Luzon of the Philippines, where she says previously worked, experienced healing, as in the Book of Acts. Others also note that experiencing or learning of healings has been a major cause of Pentecostal growth in the Philippines. Most converts among the Kakakais, the Kakakanais in the northern Philippines, Ma reports, have come to Christ through the experience of miraculous healing. She points out that healings are a regular phenomenon in charismatic and Pentecostal churches and home meetings in the Philippines. Ma goes on to illustrate her claims with a number of more specific examples. One of those is a church elder whom she knew who had medically incurable cancer. The pastor regularly visited and prayed for him until he was healed, greatly affecting those who knew him. The pastor of Cathedral of Praise notes that during the church service, his wife was fully healed from tuberculosis in both lungs. Another member recounts that during a crusade, his dying wife, who had a toxic goiter, was healed. A sympathetic and popular writer who observed healing miracles in the Philippines reports how a doctor attending one of the meetings confirmed that one of his own deaf patients had just been healed. A close friend of mine from college also reports to me witnessing numerous instances and obvious healings in the Philippines. So again, what are we doing here? We're going through the broad brush of claims that are made. And so he's not trying to say that these are real, not even him, not even Keener, who does believe in miracles more. I mean, not, he's more charismatic than I am in these areas. Much more charismatic. He is just giving a broad brush saying there are lots and lots of claims for us to go through. That is what is going on here. He's not saying these are the legitimate claims or these are the best we have by any means. We have many, many good claims that we will focus on. But again, people need to focus on this. We need somebody that, I don't know what it would be called. You know, I just said a missiologist is somebody who studies missions. But I think there ought to be a miracleologist of some sort, seriously, within seminaries, within the churches, that helps people work through this supernatural world. And it's just focused on that. It's not a demonologist necessarily, but somebody who that is their concentration, is to help people see all the claims that are going on, how to evaluate them and where to go next with this stuff and how to look for it within your church. And I don't care whether you're a charismatic church or you're charismatic or non-charismatic, this is something that needs to happen because these miraculous claims are being made. So I think there should be a miracleologist of some sort. But that's what's going on here. We're going through, and my thoughts are these with you, going through with you, just a few of these examples, kind of continuing what we're doing here, getting some of the base of what Craig Keener's methodology is, and then starting to look into the individual miracles later on. But I want to get a broad brush as well. It'd be nice if you guys want me to do this. This will be fun because I'm going through this work anyway. So I think it would be great to go through it with you guys to see you guys' reaction to this. Because as you all know from Introduction to Theology, I still think one of the most important methodologies that we have to keep is to continue to do theology in a broad community, not an isolated community where you already have everybody that agrees with you, but people who will push back, where iron can sharpen iron. If you do not have a situation where iron can sharpen iron, either in your theology or in your personal life, where people can strike you down and kind of, you know, get you straightened out, your pastor or whoever, which right now I don't have, I admit, and I need to have, but that's what I'm doing here. Let me know if you guys want to go through this. This is for you guys. I'm just reaching out to you guys on my Patreon. So let me know, and we'll keep on going through this. I'll see you next time if you do.
Theology Unplugged.